Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Town Talk, financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. This is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. And joining us this morning is Suzanne Ludlum. She is the owner of Trinity Yoga Therapy in Stafford, and also the author of a book, An Imperfect Pilgrim: Trauma and Healing on This Side of the Rainbow. Suzanne, it's good to have you back this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Ted. Thanks for having me back.
You have a compelling story that we're gonna talk about this morning. I read your book in the last week or so, and boy, there are a lot of things, and we'll cover a lot of it through the next hour. But wow, you've been through a lot.
Yes, I guess so. Yes, but you know what? The key is I've been through it, and I'm out the other side.
And that's what we want to talk about. You wrote when you gave me this book in the cover of the book, you wrote, "Hope, hang on, pain ends," And what a great way to look at that.
And I can't take credit for coining that term, but it really speaks very strongly to me. And this is what I was hoping the message in the book would be to readers, is that as bad as you feel right now, and I know that your pain can be unimaginable, as bad as you're feeling right now, as much as you feel like this is your forever, this doesn't have to be your forever. And if you hold on long enough, and sometimes you need to just hold on for a second at a time, or a minute at a time, or even one breath at a time, if you just hang on, just keep going, without any idea of how long this will be necessarily. You don't have to give yourself a timeline, say, well, I better feel better in a week, or I hope I feel better in a month. There is no timeline. It is what it is. The process will be what the process will be. But the point is hanging on, because pain does end. It does end. And when you're in it, and believe me, I was in it long enough for a full decade of the deepest, darkest abyss that I could imagine anyone could ever be in. And I thought that was my forever. And I just, for some reason, I don't know, I kind of attribute it to maybe my stubbornness, maybe the grace of God, maybe it was a little bit of both. I did keep hanging on. And if someone had told me that I would have the life I have today, I would have said, you're crazy. It's not in the cards for me. So that's my message for people is, yeah, have hope, because your pain can end.
So, Suzanne, when you're in that kind of pain, like you say, for a decade or more, is it every day, or are there breaks in it, or in your case, did you just feel like every day was just a repeat of the last?
There were periods of time that would last months at a time where, yes, I felt like every day was a repeat of the last. And there were brief moments of okayness.
Yeah.
And there were even, I have to say, there were even brief moments of joy and happiness. For instance, the birth of my first child. It temporarily brought me out of my darkness. I thought, okay, this is it. I'm good now. I'm good to go. I've got a baby. I'm in love with her. And now I'm all better. And then little by little, like the frog boiling, you don't realize that you're boiling until it's too late. Hmm. It kept creeping back in a little at a time, unnoticeable by me, until one day I just found myself not being able to get out of bed and then ending up back in the hospital.
What I found in reading your book, An Imperfect Pilgrim, was just as I read it, I thought a lot of people may have, you don't know the person you may work out at the gym next to, or work in the next cubicle at work, or be in a carpool together. You just don't know stories. I never would have guessed this was your story. If I had just met you, and I would have thought, you know, here's somebody who's got it together. And we just don't know what another person's going through.
You're absolutely right. You don't know. When I speak to people, I say, look to the person on your left. Look to the person on your right. They look pretty normal, chances are, right? Well, we're all walking a difficult path. And some of us have more difficult paths than others. Long time ago, when I was in therapy, seeing one of my therapists, I was sitting in the waiting room and this young gentleman came in and he sat down across from me and he looked at me and he said, what are you doing here? You don't look like there's anything wrong with you, without knowing anything about me.
Right.
And what do you say to that? Well, yeah, let me start telling you my story. But no, you just don't do that.
Yeah.
But you have to have an understanding that everyone is walking a difficult path at some point in their life. And there's a sign at a conference center in the Berkshires that I read once that just stuck with me always. And it said something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing, but it said something to the effect of, be kind to those you meet because we are all having a difficult time.
Yeah. As you look back at your life and in the dark times, were there things that people could have done to have helped you and moved you along, or was this something that you had to deal with and come to terms with and figure it out yourself?
In my case, it's something that I had to deal with pretty much by myself, because if you back up a little bit, my story. Well, everybody's story begins pretty much in early childhood, but the dark part of my story began when my family members started dying, one at a time, all unrelated. So when I was 19, my sister died suddenly, unexpectedly. A year later, my mom, unexpectedly. 5 months later, my dad.
And you're like 21 at that
point. I was 21, yeah. And I had a kid brother. And he and I just both fell apart. I looked at him one day and when he was 14 and I said, you and I are going to stick together. And, you know, I mean, you could see the pain in his face. And we couldn't stick together because we were both dealing with our own grief and our own anger and our own loss and our own demons. And he fell apart. I fell apart. And I got into I left the state. I was living in New Jersey. I left the state. I went out to the West Coast. You'll know the story in the book, but just I got in with the wrong crowd. I was taken out of that situation. I was brought back to New Jersey. And someone recommended that I go see a psychiatrist who supposedly was an expert in this area. And he did more damage to me than good. And so I really didn't have anyone. I had friends, mm-hmm. but they didn't understand. And this was in the era. This is in the early 1980s. So it was pre-era when being in therapy and having a therapist was the vogue thing to do. You know, people didn't talk openly about it. There was a lot of shame. Surprisingly, I can't believe there's still a lot of shame. I can't believe there's still a lot of stigma, but there is. But back then, it was even more prevalent. So I kept quiet. When I went to my first therapy appointment, I didn't tell anyone. I told nobody because I was so ashamed. So I was pretty isolated. Most people, I hope, are not in that situation. Most people have family nearby. Most people have good friends, close friends, who can reach out their hand and say, hey, are you okay? Is anything wrong?
We take a break. When we come back, I want to talk more about that, of what friends and when we notice something or think that there might be something of mm-hmm. what we can say. We'll all pick up on that when we come back. Suzanne Ludlum is here. Her book is An Imperfect Pilgrim, Trauma and Healing on This Side of the Rainbow. We'll talk about how you can get it, too, when we come back. This is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. Suzanne is a Stafford resident. She's also involved with Trinity Yoga Therapy, and we'll get into that, too. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Suzanne Ludlum of Stafford here this morning. She is author of the book, An Imperfect Pilgrim, Trauma and Healing on This Side of the Rainbow. This is National Suicide Prevention Month, and we are talking about all of that this morning. Just before the break, Suzanne, you got me thinking as you were talking of what are some strategies or things that we can do, each of us today? Because, you know, I may come across somebody who's a Suzanne who's going through some things, or I suspect. And how do we handle situations when we know of people we work with or may go to church with or just friends with, neighbors?
Well, what you said is key, Ted, because it helps to know. It helps to know that the person who you work next to, who you live with, who you're friends with, who you go to school with, it helps to know if they're having trouble. We don't always know that because people are sometimes very good masters of disguise and they hide it very well. My brother's a good case in point. But if you know of someone who is having trouble, reach your hand out to them literally and say, "Are you okay? Can I help you? Tell me what's going on." And people who offer that to people in need, you don't have to fix anything. You don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to have any answers. What's important is to hold space for the person who's in need, to hold space for the person who's hurting, so they feel that they're not completely alone. "I don't understand what you're going through, but I'm here with you, and I'm here for you." And if I had had someone say that to me, that might have made the difference. I don't know, because it's water under the bridge, but it might have made the difference. No one said that to me.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Because sometimes you see things and you see that somebody's personality has changed, or they don't seem quite right.
Right.
And you don't know. And I guess to know that you don't have to have all the answers, but just to be there and be a friend and just maybe even just a pat on the shoulder just to say if you ever want to talk.
I have a little plaque on my dresser at home and I love it. I framed it and it said, "Life is messy. Here, take my hand." Because life is messy. And I think what stops people from offering their time, their energy, their space to people in need or people who are hurting is because we don't know what to do. And we're frightened. We're frightened if we ask someone, "Is everything okay? What's wrong?" Because we don't want to hear the answer, or we don't know what to do with the answer, or maybe we're hurting ourselves. And so people tend to kind of stay away. And I'm not saying this as a blanket statement. There are lots and lots of people, I would guess the majority of people, who would not run away from someone who's hurting. But if you do feel that you're hesitating, take that step towards the person who's hurting, because stepping towards them will do a whole lot more good than staying where you are or turning and walking away.
Yeah.
And remember, you don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to have any answers at all.
And I guess you have to be, you do have to be willing to be, you can't have in your mind, this is way more than I want, you know, that I want to get involved in, or this is going to be too much. Just be willing to go with it. Go be the friend that you need to be.
Exactly. Exactly. And you can even go so far as to ask someone, if you suspect this, "Are you thinking of taking your own life?" Because asking someone if they're contemplating suicide doesn't make them commit suicide.
We all think that, though.
We all think it. It's a scary word. Suicide is a very frightening word. It's scary to think about. It's a scary word to say. You know, I'm a little nervous even saying the word myself. And I tried it.
Yeah. How difficult was it to write this book? Or when did you decide that you wanted to tell your story?
That was a process that was a long time in the making. I knew by the time I was 21 years old that I would write a book one day. But what I really, truly didn't know was that most of what I would eventually write, I had not lived yet. It was just the universe telling me, "You're going to write a book one day." And so, okay, I let it go. I tucked it away and let it go. And then life started happening, and I went through that whole dark period, and I came out of it, went back in, came out, went back in. And it wasn't until I was probably in my late 40s that I said, okay, I think it's time. I think it's time. But I still hesitated because I didn't know why I should write it. It had to be for the right reason.
I was going to say to you, because as you read this book and you think, especially with your parents and some of the other people that you mentioned in the book and a therapist and all, it would be easy to just write it to lash out at some of the really mean things that were done to you.
It would have been easy, and in a way it would have been gratifying, but that would be temporary, and then I would be left with the feeling of remorse and guilt.
Yeah,
because that's not what the message is about. I could write an expose, but I would feel bad. And so that wasn't the purpose of the book. What I finally settled on was, and this sort of was an epiphany for me, not until about 4 or 5 years after I decided, okay, it's time I need to write the book, was, why am I writing it? I'm writing it to inspire hope. And if that's the message, if that's the purpose for getting my story out there, then everything that I lived through would have been worth it. Because if it can help one person, it would have been worth it. And I know from the reviews I get and the comments I get that, yeah, it's helped more than one person. It's helped a lot of people so far. Yay, I'm glad. You know, I'm grateful for that.
Hey, Susan, have you heard from, have people written you, or have you heard from individual people that have said that this really has meant something to
all
them?
All the time.
Yeah, I would think
all
so.
All the time.
Yeah. It really is that kind of book that it does grip you, and it's the kind of book that it's how many pages? It's over 200 pages, and you can easily read it in a night and a half or something. It's not very it goes so fast. To write it though, you were having to relive just some things that I would think that you just never wanted to think about again.
You're right, Ted, and that's why I hesitated. Every time I decided, okay, I need to write, I ran away from it. So I got distracted with other things, and then when I finally got serious, I wrote 2 or 3 chapters, and then I got scared again. It frightened me because, yeah, writers, and especially memoir writers, typically have to live twice.
Yeah.
And living it the first time was so painful and so devastating that I really didn't think that I could live through the writing process. So I did it in bits and pieces. I just bit off a little bit at a time. And then I got serious about it, and then I got scared again. So I found a new distraction. I'll go to graduate school for 2 years. Okay, yay. So I go to graduate school for 2 years. And then after graduation, I said, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to finish the book. And a month after graduation, my husband and I were in a horrific car accident. And it laid me up for over a year where I couldn't do anything. I lost my clients. I lost my job. I lost my teaching position. And when I was finally physically able to sit up and use a keyboard, that's when the message came shouting down at me from the universe, do it now. So I did. And I took the next year to do nothing but write the book. And yes, it was very painful. And yes, I cried through the whole process. But when I was done, I was done. It was a product that was taken out of my soul, put onto the page, and then it could speak for itself.
It's near the end of the book, I think. Or at some point in the book, it's a picture of the tombstone with all the with the people who you've talked about and we've all gotten to know in the book and their deaths. To me, that was really, I was glad you did that, just because we had gotten to know all of these, we had gotten to know all your family members, and to just really see it there, it just became very real. All of a sudden you looked at this and you thought, you know, this isn't just a story. This is your story, but this story really happened.
It did. And that's exactly why I put that photo in the book, to make it real. Yes, these are real people.
It just struck me as in just a real way. At that point, you just all of a sudden realize that this isn't just a story.
Right.
This is your story.
And the photo in the beginning of the two little girls, that's me and my older sister.
Yeah.
On Easter Sunday. I think I was about 3 and she was 5. So to put that at the beginning of the book, and then the photo of the tombstone at the end of the book sort of frames the entire story.
I did. When I saw that, I was nearly done. Because at the beginning, I just saw it, and you move on. But you look at that, and you just think, wow, when that picture was taken, you had, you know, no one had any idea.
No one had any idea.
What was ahead?
It's a happy picture. It was a happy time.
Yeah.
I remember the day that picture was taken.
Wow.
Wearing my little white gloves.
Yeah. The book is An Imperfect Pilgrim. Where can we get this?
It's available, let's see, locally. You can pick up a copy at Yoga Foundation, but that's until Saturday because they're changing their structure and I'm picking up the rest of the copies.
Oh, okay.
You can also pick up some copies at Agora downtown on Caroline Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also have copies for people, and you can order it on barnesandnoble.com. If you go into a brick and mortar store, Barnes & Noble, they don't carry it on the shelves, but if you ask them to order it, they can order it. You can also purchase it through Amazon, both as a hard copy paperback and as an ebook. And then you can also, of course, get it through the publisher, which is BalboaPress.com.
It's An Imperfect Pilgrim, Trauma and Healing on This Side of the Rainbow. Suzanne Ludlam is here this morning. She is a Stafford resident, also involved with Trinity Yoga Therapy. We'll talk about that in a little bit when we come back. Also, you mentioned your brother and not seeing signs. We'll get into that, too, when we come back. Suzanne Ludlam here this morning. More coming up. Town Talk, financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's now 8:31.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Suzanne Ludlam is here this morning. This is National Suicide Prevention Month. Suzanne is the author of the book, An Imperfect Pilgrim, Trauma and Healing on This Side of the Rainbow. It really is a great read. Even if it doesn't apply to you, there may be someone you work with in your family or someone you know that it will help you, and it just gives a lot of hope. You mentioned earlier, Suzanne, about your brother and how he masked things, and that you didn't know certain things.
I did know and I didn't know at the same time. He was in the Army Special Forces. He was his father's son, and my father was very composed. He kept to himself. He didn't, my father fought in World War II in the Pacific Theater. Never talked about anything. He kept it all to himself. And my brother was very much like him. And after our parents and our sister died, like I said before, we tried to stick together. I tried to take care of him. He was 5.5 years younger than me. But I was still virtually a kid myself. I was 21.
Right.
And so we went through, the next 10 years. He joined the Army and he went into Special Forces. And I really feel that gave him purpose. But I would get these cryptic, drunken messages on my answering machine in the middle of the night from Joey, my brother, saying, I can't do this, I can't do this. And it terrified me.
Yeah.
But he was in Special Forces training and I couldn't necessarily reach out to him at the drop of a hat. So when I could get in touch with him, we talked. He said, and he blew it off. No, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. And then he went to Desert Storm in 1991, and he was part of that conflict. And he came back in June, and we reconnected. He was in Fort Hood, Texas. He was still in the military. And we talked almost every night on the phone. And that was the first time in over a decade that I felt that I could stop worrying about him, because he sounded so good. He sounded grounded. He sounded together. He sounded like he was in a good place in his head and in his life. And we talked on the phone one Friday evening and made plans for him to come up to Jersey, where I was living, to, just to visit for a while. And when we were saying goodbye, I heard something in his voice. And I paused and I said, "Are you okay?" He said, yeah, I'm fine. And so I dismissed it. My gut told me other, but I dismissed it. And we said our goodbyes. And later on that evening, he took his life. And for the longest time, I felt so guilty because I said to myself, I should have known, because that was after my own suicide attempt, where I told everybody, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, I'm fine. Clearly, I wasn't fine. But when you take someone's word at face value, it's kind of easy to say, oh, okay, they say they're fine. But if your gut is telling you something different, that's your truth. That's your true voice talking. You have to listen to your gut and not with your ears.
And so what do you do in that? And then if you do think that, follow up more and like we said earlier, you know, say it, you know, are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking about hurting yourself?
Yeah. Ask the questions. Don't be afraid to ask the questions. And if you're with someone in person, stay with them. Don't go home. Just stay with them. And say, okay, I'm just going to hang out for a while. And they may not want you around. They may already have plans. They may already have an intention. But just say, no, I'm just going to hang out here. And I would imagine most of the time the person would be grateful.
Would you have been grateful when you knew you were going to, when you had it in your mind that you were going to do something? If someone had said, you know, I'm just going to hang out. Let's just hang out together.
I think after the crisis had passed, I would have been grateful.
Yeah.
At the time, no, I wouldn't have been grateful, but nobody asked me.
Yeah. Mm. You got an excerpt you wanted to read from the book, Imperfect Pilgrim.
Okay, to put this in context, I had been hospitalized 8 times, and this was during the 8th hospitalization. And my depression had gotten so bad that I fell into a psychotic state, and I literally had lost touch with reality. So I ran away from my house. I hid in the woods at night. The police found me. They took me to the hospital. And this is where the story picks up. Hours later, I was in psych emergency at the hospital. I hadn't gone far in the woods. Walter found me sitting on a rock and drove me to the emergency room. I was unresponsive and catatonic, and barely able to answer questions with any measure of sensibility. Where are you right now? The attendant asked. Venice, I replied. What did I just say? I sat slumped in the chair, staring unblinkingly at the ceiling. The dialogue would have seemed normal if it weren't for the questions and answers being totally out of sync with each other, like two different conversations going on in opposite directions. I was aware of the words coming from me, but had no control over what I said. Like a puppet on a string, my actions were not my own. I was frightened and wanted to run, but at the same time, I desperately hoped someone would save me. I was admitted to 4B unit. They don't call them, quote, wards anymore because it sounds too, well, mental. For the first 2 weeks, I stayed in my room on the 4th floor without speaking. I didn't cry. I didn't utter a sound. I pulled the mattress off the wooden bed frame and stood it on its side in the corner of the room, creating a fort of sorts, where I slept on the floor, wrapped in hospital blankets. The soundless screams continued to echo inside my head until the only way to silence them was to throw my head against the radiator with the force of a wrecking ball. This provided a strange sense of relief, and the physical pain was a welcome release. The clanging noise of skull against metal flew through the halls like an alarm bell, and I could hear shoes slamming against the tiled floor as several nurses ran toward my room. A tall blonde woman, I guess she was head nurse, dropped to her knees and locked my head between her hands as her eyes pierced mine. "Sue, stop," she cried. I could see her eyes meeting mine, but my gaze drifted somewhere through her as I was looking at a ghost. I slowly slipped out of her hold and crawled back to my corner on the floor behind the mattress wall. This went on for 3 more days until I grew so tired that I lay in my corner without coming out. I had stopped eating before the hospital. I loathed myself and decided that starvation was a suitable punishment for being alive. I stayed in my room, lying in my corner. After another week, my blood pressure had dropped to a dangerous level, and conversation among the medical staff circled around the topic of intravenous feeding. Around the third week, something began to shift. As I lay on my bed, I eventually put the mattress back on the frame. I heard my own voice inside my head speaking to Joey years ago. This is when he was still alive. If anything happens to Dad, you and I will stick together. I remember the day I said that to him. I remember reaching across the table to take his hand and seeing the anguish on his young face. How could I leave him now? And how could I leave my little girl? I knew the agony of losing my mother too young, and I felt horrible thinking that I could easily do the same to my own daughter. There are two people in this world who desperately need me, I thought. I have to be here for them. I sat up and looked at my friend who had come to see me. Wearily, I managed to pull the words out of my throat. I can't go on like this anymore. The shift I'm talking about was the realization that I had just hit bottom. I was 31 years old and had spent 10 years falling hard into an abyss that I believed with all my being was unrecoverable. I couldn't see a way out, but I also knew I couldn't stay where I was. The faces of my daughter and kid brother crystallized in front of me as though to say, it's time to climb up.
I'm glad you read that, Suzanne, because it does, more so than just you and I talking about various things, just shows, you know, where you are. And again, to see you today, I would never, if you had read that, I would have thought, boy, that too bad for that person. That's not, you know, the fact that it's you. And I would never have guessed that.
Well, I can honestly say that that was a long time ago. And I'm, for the most part, I feel that I'm on the other side of that darkness. I still have to work on myself every day. Sue has to work on Sue every day. Whether it's getting on my mat and moving my body and getting out of my head, or changing the dialogue in my head, or telling myself when my mind starts telling me stories that I know now are not true, I have to remind myself, that's fear talking. That's depression talking. I actually have a conversation with myself. And that's what gets us in trouble when we're spiraling down into that abyss, is we listen to the voices and the stories in our head, and we believe them because that's all we know. But those are the voices of the conditioned self. And what's deeper inside that we can, as if we hang on long enough, get in touch with, is the voice of the true self.
Town Talk, financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Suzanne Ludlam here this morning. She's author of the book An Imperfect Pilgrim. She's from Stafford. Trinity Yoga Therapy is what she's involved with, and we'll talk about that when we wrap this up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
And
opinions, we've all got them, and we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
This is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. Hoping to give you hope this morning, Suzanne Ludlam here. She is from Stafford and the author of An Imperfect Pilgrim. She's also involved with Trinity Yoga Therapy. Suzanne, you read an excerpt from An Imperfect Pilgrim in the last segment. And you had one more you wanted to read before we get out of here this morning.
Yes, fast forward a few years, and this is when I can say that I've come through it and now I'm in a better place. And this is more of a reflection. When I was a child, my favorite movie was The Wizard of Oz. It came on TV once a year, and I always looked forward to sitting in front of the family RCA TV, watching in amazement as the tornado swept Dorothy's house away, spinning it up, 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 and seeing it crash land in Technicolor glory somewhere on the other side of the rainbow. I was too young at the time to understand the underlying message, Frank Baum was trying to convey through his beloved Forrest characters. But as I grew and continued to watch the movie every year, I could see a deeper meaning. The Tin Man, the Scarecrow, and the Lion all joined Dorothy on her quest to Oz in hopes that the wizard might give them what they believed was missing in their lives, a heart, a brain, courage, and for Dorothy, a way back home. But during their sojourn, it was Scarecrow who came up with the best ideas, Lion who exhibited bravery beyond compare, and Tin Man's tears that kept rusting his joints. It was an aha moment for me when I finally realized that they always had what they sought. They only needed validation from the wizard. And Dorothy? She spent most of the movie trying to return to the very place from which she'd run away. She ran because she believed there was something better on the other side of the rainbow, but realized that what she had been searching for was ultimately found in the very place she had left. There's a stark parallel between this story and mine. I spent years running, either away from grief or toward the hope of happiness that I thought existed anywhere but where I was. I ran from my depression. I ran from my anger. I ran from my grief in hopes that it wouldn't catch up with me. I ran to California because I believed it was the promised land. I ran back to New Jersey because I couldn't find what I was looking for out west. I ran into the arms of emotionally unavailable and sometimes dangerous men, and I was exhausted. I thought that if I could run away, I could keep away from the pain. It took a very long time to realize that all that running got me nowhere, that I had the strength all along to sit with my pain. It wasn't something I had to fight or conquer. It wouldn't kill me, although I believed at the time that it could. The feelings that live in me, sadness, grief, fear, joy, happiness, anxiety, anger, contentment, are all a part of who I am. But any and all of these feelings don't define who I am. I am much more. The meditation practice I first began when I was 16 came and went throughout my life. I would redevote myself to it from time to time and then abandon it when life got busy or I became depressed. A few years ago, I took it up again and made an effort to make it an integral part of my regular yoga practice. When I began sitting in meditation, spending time on my yoga mat, and meeting the self within, I realized that what I thought I was running away from wasn't real, and what I had been running toward had been a part of me all along. Feelings are transient, but I am never changing spirit. The sense of well-being I seek is within. The companion I seek is within. My true source of peace is deep within. I don't have to go looking for it in false prophets or selfish psychiatrists or the bottom of a wine bottle or a group of people in the hills of California. The place in the world I had been searching for was ultimately found in the quiet of my own mind.
Mm. Suzanne Ludlam, she's reading from An Imperfect Pilgrim, the book. Thank you for writing this book, just because I think it's a help.
Thank you. I appreciate hearing that. And the book sort of reminds me of a story that I heard about a man in a hole, and it goes very quickly. There was a man walking down the street, and he fell into a hole, and it was a deep, dark hole with very tall walls, and he couldn't get out. And he started yelling for help, and a little while later, a doctor walked by, and he yelled up, "Hey, doc, can you help me? I'm in this hole, and I can't get up." And the doctor threw down a prescription. A little while later, a religious figure walked by, and he said, "Hey, pastor, I'm in this hole and I can't get up." And he threw down a prayer. And a little while later, a friend walked by and the guy yelled up, "Hey, buddy, I'm in this hole and I can't get up. Can you help me?" And the friend jumped down into the hole with him. And the guy said, "What are you, crazy? Now we're both down here. How are we ever going to get out of here?" And the friend said, "Yeah, I know, but I've been here before and I know a way out." That's the book.
And you know a way out, and you've provided that. Trinity Yoga Therapy is your business. The website is trinityyogaandhealing.com.
Actually, it's trinityyogatherapy.com.
Oh, trinityyogatherapy.com. Okay. Yeah. A little bit about that for someone who that may be what they're looking for.
It's Well, we can talk about it a little more, but yoga therapy is a little different than what people understand yoga to be. And it's very client-centered. It's one-on-one normally. I have a private practice in South Stafford, work out of my home. It's a private space. And I work with people who have all sorts of conditions and illnesses and ailments. My main focus, however, is working with people who have mental health issues, traumatic brain injuries, trauma, anxiety, depression.
TrinityYogaTherapy.com if someone wants more information on that. If someone, again, you mentioned An Imperfect Pilgrim is available at Barnes in Noble online or Amazon or...
Through me,
yeah.
Agora Downtown.
Agora. So the other one I forgot. So yeah, just look it up and it will really help. Well, Suzanne, it's been great having you here this morning. You're going to be a speaker at Out of the Darkness, the walk. Is that next weekend?
It's a week from this Saturday in Old Mill Park. Registration is still open. It starts, I believe, at 10 a.m. It goes until 12:30. I think it's only about a 3-mile walk. And I'm one of these speakers giving opening remarks. So come on down. We need your support. Everyone who's been touched by suicide in some way whatsoever, come on down.
And boy,
spread the hope.
The one takeaway here is, if you suspect something, be a friend. Be a friend to a person you think may need help.
Yes.
You never know.
And don't be afraid. And don't think you need to have all the answers.
Suzanne, thank you again. I can't imagine how difficult this was to write and even to come in here and relive it and talk about it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Suzanne Ludlum is author of An Imperfect Pilgrim, Trauma and Healing on This Side of the Rainbow. This is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. If you want to find out more about her yoga business, TrinityYogaTherapy.com. That's it for Town Talk this morning. Thank you for listening. We will see you tomorrow on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.